Retro.
Go.
Fido.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, greetings from Florida's chilly space coast today. Happy New Year to all of you. I am Jim Behnke, and this is the January 2nd, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, today we really do intend to examine the past, present, and future of space exploration. As we say so long, finally, to 2009, and contemplate what's ahead for 2010. And I know there's a little controversy. Is it 2010 or is it 2010? And I have grown up always believing it would be 2010, so that's what I'm going to use. Along the way, we're going to reveal what I thought were the top 10 space stories of this past year. No guests today, just my opinions and comments, and hopefully yours too. What were the space-related highlights for you in 2009? Where do you think we ought to be going in space during 2010 and beyond? Today's program is going to be all about us, so I hope to hear from you. You can join in by calling into the studio today at 768-1240. AT&T wireless customers along Florida's Space Coast can dial star 1240 to reach us with a free phone call. From anywhere in the world, if you're listening to us online, call us at 321-768-1240. Or send email anytime to spacetalking@aol.com. And it'll show up right here on the computer screen right next to me here. Well, here we are, 2010. I hope you all had some fun on New Year's Eve. Yes, we are all getting older, and time seems to pass more quickly. The kids are growing up too fast, and there's never enough time to get it all done in a day. And all the cliches are true because we live them every day. At least I know I do. Personally, I'm feeling a little, I guess spooked would be the word, about the fact that it is 2010. This year, meaning the specific year 2010, has always represented to me the far future. Even more so than I think a lot of people thought of 2001 as really being the future of the 21st century. When I grew up as a kid in Minnesota, living across the river from Metropolitan Stadium, my vision of the future was shaped by TV shows like The Jetsons and Star Trek, of course. In school, we would watch a lot of times the teachers would drag out these old films made by Disney, some of the education films that they did. I can remember watching Disney films about past world fairs. There was a great one about the use of nuclear energy. I think it was called The Atom is Our Friend. And of course, the teases about Walt Disney's plans for his Florida project in something unusual called Epcot. And I guess growing up there in Minnesota, and I'm thinking to the future, and I always did again think to the 2010, perhaps like many of you, you know, I was certain that by now we would all be living in giant cities filled with Art Deco, chrome, and glass towers. We would commute to work on electric people movers and go on family outings using our flying car. Every garage would have one, of course. Our home and city and church would be powered by a nuclear fusion plant, not fission, mind you, fusion plant. That conveniently was right in your neighborhood even. In fact, perhaps every house would have its own little fusion generator. It would be so safe and wonderful. Space flight, of course, would be commonplace. We'd have colonies in Earth orbit, thousands of people living up there. We'd have hundreds of people living on outposts on the moon and Mars. We'd have asteroid mining and solar power satellites, all the interesting things that perhaps are still in store for us. And, of course, one more thing. By 2010, the Minnesota Vikings would have the NFL record for winning the most Super Bowls. So, I guess as you can tell, it hasn't quite worked out like I thought it would. I guess in many ways, politically, morally, even architecturally, I am disappointed about where we are right now as a nation and as a planet going into this new year, this 2010, this future. On the downside, I'll just say, you know, I mean, our nation is polarized on every issue, even on the space program. There are a great many folks out there who say the nation is broke and we can't afford to waste all that money in space, or that we, you know, we need to fix all of our problems on Earth before we go anywhere else. And in that polarization, there's no room for compromise, it seems. There's no room for setting priorities or having a civil conversation to resolve the matter. Instead, the opposition is labeled. It's you know, you're called names and your ideas are dismissed without consideration. And it's clear to everyone, I think, that that's no way to run a nation. And the personal vindictiveness that goes along with some of this politics obviously must stop. Everyone agrees that that's the way it should be, but it never seems to be that way. You know, try as I might to not fall into the trap, and I would never say this publicly, or at least, you know, to someone to their face, but, you know, every time I hear someone say these things about our space program, you know, I have this urge to just tell them, you know, that what you're saying is short-sighted, fuzzy-headed, myopic, misguided, unintelligent, dull-witted, and that you're a complete waste of time and an ugly bag of mostly water, which, by the way, is an obscure Star Trek reference. But, you know, I look at these people sometimes and say these things, and that's what's going through my head. So, okay, well, anyway, 2010. It doesn't look the way I thought it might when I was young, as I've said. But on the positive side, on the glasses half full side, it's still an amazing and futuristic excuse me, era that we live in. I mean, we may not have a flying car in every garage, but we've got some pretty remarkable technology at our disposal. Things that perhaps we couldn't even think of when we were kids, we now have. Personal computers of all sizes. I mean, everything from the giant desktops to the laptops to the netbooks to your PDAs, your cell phones. The imaging technology that's used in space, in medicine, in manufacturing, it's unbelievable what it can do. Electric cars are coming. They're here already, and they're gonna be more popular and more powerful and more reliable and less expensive as time goes on. Worldwide navigation through GPS is nothing short of a miracle. Satellite television, and I gotta say, that's the one I still get the biggest kick out of. I mean, consider it, the TV in my family room, which is not a high-def, widescreen LCD, I might add, should anyone named Mrs. Banky be listening, that TV is attached to a small dish on the roof that receives its signal directly from a satellite more than 22,300 miles away. I mean, that's just remarkable. I mean, I never thought as a kid growing up that I would have my own satellite dish receiving a signal directly from space. Just, it's incredible. And of course, I think the neatest thing about 2010 right now in terms of space is that we have an International Space Station in orbit that is giant and huge, almost done. It's been home nonstop for humans for the past 9 years. It's just remarkable. So 2010 isn't what I thought it would be, but it's already more than I can have dreamed possible. And I hope, despite all the good and the bad, that you feel the same way, that, you know. And looking ahead to 2010, I think, you know, we are on the razor's edge of something big. It could be very good. It could be just okay. It's going to be a rough ride any way you look at it. But if you want to get a better sense of what 2010 will be like, we just have to look back at the top stories of 2009. And when we come back from this short break, we're going to take that trip down memory lane and do just that. So give us a call, 768-1240. Join us on the other side. Remember, this is Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB. 2010. And it's Space Talk right here on WMMB. I'm Jim Banky. Welcome back. That's Aaron, our board operator, working fast to put in the Jetsons theme. Way to go. 321-768-1240 is the number to give us a call here in the studio from anywhere in the nation. 768-1240, of course, the local number to give us a call and join in this discussion of 2009 looking back and 2010 looking ahead. And we're going to now take the next little bit of the program here and run down our top 10 space stories for 2009. And as I was putting this list together over the last few days, it occurred to me that there was really no way to pick 10 very specific stories, very specific items, very specific news events, and rank them in any kind of order. And so many of them overlap and touch upon each other. And really what I've done here now is instead of really the top 10 space stories, I really got the top 10 space categories of stories, perhaps, or the top 10, if you were to assign a beat to a space reporter of the different ways you could cover this program, this is kind of what we're getting at. So we're going to run down these for the rest of the program. And again, inviting you to call in 768-1240 at any time to agree, disagree, add in your two cents, or ask something completely non sequitur and just go off the ranch somewhere and ask me something about space. But this is our time together on this holiday New Year's weekend. Number 10 on the list is the world of commercial space. Been a lot of talk about exactly what does that mean. Well, here's what I think it means. Let's look at United Launch Alliance, the company responsible for launching Deltas and Atlas rockets. 37 shots in 36 months, averaging one a month since they were officially formed 3 years ago. Absolutely outstanding job this past year. 8 Delta IIs, 3 Delta IVs, and a number of Atlases. Just an incredible job on both coasts. To give you an idea of where they stand, just looking at Deltas, for example, 11. Proton in Russia did 10. Launches altogether. Some of them government, some of them commercial. Ariane 5, all basically commercial launches out of South America, did 7. So we seem to be holding our own. The other big story in commercial space was SpaceX and Falcon 9. Last January, they stacked their new rocket out at the launch pad at Cape Canaveral. And Elon Musk, the owner-operator of SpaceX, very hopeful to get off the ground with the Falcon 9 rocket in early February, and you know, we'll give him plenty of time and leeway to get that done right and get it done successfully. But again, that's a huge opportunity for commercial space. Spaceship Two was unveiled just here in December out in California. That's the suborbital space plane that's going to take passengers up perhaps in 2011. And New Mexico at Spaceport America also had their groundbreaking to build their spaceport during the past year. So commercial space, a big deal. Number 9 in the lineup is Space Florida. And Space Florida, a very important agency for the state of Florida, responsible for economic development of space in Florida, responsible for space operations as they relate to the state in Florida. They have an education mission. They have a finance mission as well. And they had a major course change this year. The original president, Steve Kohler, resigned in May. Frank DiBello was picked up as the interim and then approved as the official new president this fall. And since Frank has come on board permanently now, they have put together their master plan for Space Florida, for the state of Florida and the space program. That plan is done. It is online at Space Florida. And I encourage you, if you're interested in state space activities, to go take a look at this plan. Very comprehensive. Very well thought out, and I think probably one of the more accurate forecasts for what we ought to be doing, not only here in the Brevard County area, but for the entire state of Florida. And you're going to find some stuff going on in Jacksonville that maybe if you weren't aware of, there's some neat things going on at Cecil Field up there as well, and all that being coordinated by Space Florida and the team led by Frank DiBello. The number 8 story of the year, I thought, was was the selection of Charlie Bolden, nominated and approved as the new NASA administrator. He was nominated in May by President Obama and confirmed by the Senate in July. Charlie Bolden, of course, no stranger to the Space Coast, a 4-time space shuttle astronaut. Lloyd Garver was nominated and confirmed as the deputy administrator. She has a lot of space policy experience with NASA, working for NASA before, working in and around the space policy circles of Washington. She was very involved in President Obama's campaign in terms of helping them understand space policy and helping them transition NASA to the new administration. And a good friend, actually, and someone I've known for a long time, and very happy to see her and Charlie as the number 1-2 team, replacing Mike Griffin, who leaves a great legacy in starting up the Constellation program. We'll see where that goes here in the future. And, of course, Sean O'Keefe coming before for him, and a man who I have a lot of respect for. Well, let's see. The number 7 story was, and I categorize this as the space science other planets story. There's a lot of things that happen in space science. You know, we don't just launch rockets to watch them fly out of our backyard. You know, they are carrying things. And a lot of times they're carrying very neat science payloads, very interesting experiments going on and helping, again, every year to rewrite our textbooks as to what we know and understand about our universe. And just running down through some of the highlights here, are just absolutely incredible about what's been going on. First of all, the Mars rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, just nonstop excitement from them since they landed in January of 2004, the first one did, Spirit, and they were only supposed to last about 2 or 3 months. And here we are 6 years later, and they're still producing science. And even the rover Spirit, which has been stuck in some sand on the Martian soil since April, it's still stuck, and that's going to be an issue for 2010. But even as it's stuck and they're trying to free the thing by driving its wheels, which were just basically spinning and going nowhere, actually revealed some layers of soil underneath it that they would never have found if they hadn't done this, and the rover hadn't been stuck, and again learning that there's some materials up here on Mars, once again just. Just keep reinforcing this idea that this was once a very wet world, and the chances of life being up there, even as microbes right now, are still very high. And we've just got to get to this planet and keep learning more. A couple other things. In December, the Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer, a spacecraft known WISE, was launched from Vandenberg in California. It's going to map the entire sky in the infrared, looking for a lot of variety of things, including the ability to see asteroids and be able to map asteroids that are not only in the asteroid belt and safely, you know, put there and going to stay there, but also a lot of these near-Earth asteroids that keep wanting to whiz by our planet and threaten us every once in a while. And it's going to be able to map those things very well. Launched in March was the Kepler Space Telescope, specifically a space telescope to go up and look for planets around other stars. And they've got some very exciting things to talk to us about. And coincidentally, they're going to have a press conference on Monday to do their first results of their science investigation since they were launched in March. So that's something I'm sure we're going to wind up talking about next week. Cassini at Saturn launched so long ago, had finished its mission. They extended it, and they're now doing this mission with European scientists to look at how the seasons are changing on Saturn. As it continues to go around the sun, the sun angles are all changing. The angle at which the rings are around the planet compared to the orientation of the spacecraft and the sun are all changing. We're getting new looks up there of all the moons, the rings, the planet that we just couldn't see before. Now you can compare then and now from just the last few years, and they're learning so much about Saturn and about that ring system and about just some real basic science up there. Really cool. Messenger was sent to Mercury. It flew by Mercury again as it continues to do some loops around the inner solar system. Eventually, Messenger going to go into orbit around Mercury. And again, I think they've mapped now something like 90% of the surface of Mercury with images, and just looking really good up there, learning again about this rocky, hard, hot planet, the closest planet to the sun. And the other kind of big space science news story out there this year that everyone's been keeping an eye on, and in fact, just this week, just as the new year was breaking, Russia made a contribution to this story. The asteroid Apophis, which you may have heard about, first discovered in 2004. When it was first discovered, they realized that this thing was on a pretty close collision course with the Earth. And in fact, in April, on Friday the 13th, April 13th in the year 2029, the asteroid's going to come within 18,000 miles of our planet. That's closer to the planet than the satellites, the DirecTV satellite I was talking about earlier. And then a few years later, in 2036, there was a good chance it was going to come, a 1 in 45,000 chance it was actually going to hit the planet. They've now refined that to 4 in a million, a chance of 4 in 1 million. So it's looking pretty good it's going to miss us. But Russia just this past week decided that they're going to look really hard at going up there to Apophis and trying to deflect it. And that's caused some a lot of interesting reaction amongst the international space community. So those are the first 10987 on our list. We're going to take our five-minute break at the bottom of the hour here, our five-minute built-in hold. When we come back, we'll continue counting down the top stories of 2009 right here on Space Talk, brought to you by the United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke, and again, you're listening to WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, welcome back to the second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. 321-768-1240, the number to call into the studio here is star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers along the Space Coast. Via email, send us something to spacetalking@AOL.com. By the way, you can also follow us on Twitter throughout the week when we have something special to announce or remind you when the program is about to start. Follow us on Twitter, the username spacetalking. And I want to remind all of you that Space Talk, of course, can be heard live every week online, as in right now, at WMMBAM.com. And by the way, by late tonight or first thing in the morning, we'll have a recording of today's show available as a podcast to download if you miss it or want to review. Again, available every week at WMMBAM.com. By the way, real quick, acknowledgement in the sports world. I'm a sports fan, a football fan, as you know. The Gators, Tebow, what a great day yesterday. Record-setting day. Can't wait to see him playing in the NFL soon. And Bobby Bowden, longtime coach at FSU, bows out in style with a big win at FSU. Okay, the Vikings aren't doing that well right now, but we're still in the playoffs. We're still the North Division champs. And hopefully we'll beat New York tomorrow and go in and have a long, long, productive playoff season. And we'll be talking about them as a top story for 2010. I'll find some way to include it in the space list. Well, let's pick it up where we left off. Number six, as we talk down the top 10 space stories for 2009. Number six, the International Space Station continuing to make news on orbit, in low Earth orbit. Right now, five crew members on board the space station. This year was the first time officially, or I should say in 2009, officially, that six crew members of the space station can accommodate six crew. In juggling the crew and doing a final crew exchange with the space shuttle, they did go down to two crew members for the last few months, just before Christmas. Three more launched into orbit, and now there are five on board, and they'll bump it up to six here again coming up here in April, I believe is the current timeline for that. Also at the space station, some highlights this year. The Japanese launched a HTV vehicle, their new cargo vehicle, complementing what the Soyuz, what the Progress folks do, Russia does with the Progress vehicle, and the European Space Agency has their automated transfer vehicle also. So we have another country providing cargo capability to the space station. Japan launched their HTV in September. It stayed about 43 days, brought up about 5,400 pounds worth of cargo. So that's all good for us, good for the International Space Station as time moves on. Unfortunately, we will lose the shuttle here. Buzz Lightyear had spent 15 months on board and was a real cool Disney education program that they did with NASA. The Colbert treadmill is already up there. The comedian winning his name on a treadmill. The Tranquility Node going up next on Endeavour in 2010. And as we mentioned earlier in the program, International Space Station crew now at 9 years and counting. They've begun their 10th year of nonstop humans in space, and hopefully that's something that will now, for the history of humanity, we will always have at least one human on orbit. Number five this year was the Apollo 11's 40th anniversary, and I thought that was a pretty big event because it underscores so much of what we've been talking about all year about the future of the space program, where we've been and where we're going, and made it all the more important and poignant. There were all sorts of great products produced, books, DVDs, films, documentaries, web pages to relive. I thought Florida Today did an outstanding job with their moon coverage and their anniversary coverage, doing something that I had always wanted to do way back when we started Space Online back in the 90s. They did an outstanding job with that. And all that is still online, by the way, at floridaday.com. Great gala in Washington. The astronauts, Neil, Buzz, and Mike. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Mike Collins said some neat things. They got to visit the White House. I thought the funniest joke that came out of that was that the Apollo 11 crew got to go to the White House, and Buzz and Neil were invited to come in to see the president while Mike Collins circled the White House outside in a golf cart. And, you know, where's the laugh track when I needed it? Because that was a hilarious joke. And if you get it, you're laughing your head off right now, I guarantee you. Apollo 11 was great. Still tugs at the heart. Still something to inspire. Mike Collins did an interview himself. He really kind of refused to talk to anybody about the anniversary. So he did his own question and answer for NASA, and they released that. And you can still get this online. But he talked about some of the things. Were you happy with the seat you had? Absolutely. It was an honor. He says, what was the strongest memory of Apollo 11? He says, looking back at the Earth from a great distance, the planet being small, shiny, serene, blue and white, fragile. He says, that was 40 years ago. Would it look the same today? He said, yes, from the moon, but appearances can be deceiving. He talks about population growth. He talks about that our planet maybe can't sustain the kind of activity that we're asking it to sustain. He says the loss of habitat, the trashing of oceans, the accumulation of waste products. This is no way to treat a planet, he says. And so the questioner, which is him, says, you are starting to sound a little grumpy. Are you grumpy? He says, at age 78, yes, in many ways. And he talks about how some things in society irritate him, about being a celebrity, about being a hero. He says, aren't you both? He says, no, not me. He says he doesn't go for the celebrity stuff. He can't believe that the attention we pay these celebrities just for getting arrested to get noticed. He says, don't get me started. So he says to himself, well, if I wanted to sum you up, I should say grumpy. He says, no, no, lucky. He says he talked about how lucky he was to do what he did, to have the career he did. He said, put lucky on my team's tombstone. He says, do you think you've gotten enough recognition for your accomplishments? And he says, Lordy, yes, oodles and oodles. He says to himself, oodles? But you don't have any keen insights? And this was the best line. He says, oh, yeah, he's got a whole bunch of keen insights, but he's saving them for the 50th anniversary. So we look forward 10 years from now to Mike Collins' unique insights. Number four, the L-Cross Moon science experiment, PR nightmare. I don't know what it was, but it was all good. But TV didn't like it because it didn't show a big splash. This was the probe that the Centaur upper stage was going to smash into the moon, and it did do that. They launched the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter and the L-Cross spacecraft on June 18th in Atlas V. The LRO, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, went into orbit around the moon, took some great pictures, proved that we did walk on the moon, by the way. Got some great surface pictures of all the Apollo astronauts' landing sites. L-Cross hits on October 9th, and the scientists, as they reported later on, said, yes, we found water. We didn't find just a little bit. We found a significant amount, and that was the whole point of L-Cross, was to smash into the surface, raise a plume of material, have the satellite look at this material, analyze its composition within minutes of itself impacting into the moon, and all those results got beamed back to Earth. Now, you know, the TVs, which went all live, were all expecting a big, bright flash and orange flame and all sorts of Hollywood-type special effects, and basically didn't see anything. And so they just turned this horrible PR thing about how we wasted our money on this thing and what a dull thing and we don't know what we're doing, and yet the experiment worked exactly as it was supposed to, prove that there was water up there, and that's a big deal. And we've spent a lot of time on this show talking about why that's a big deal. Because people are saying, well, why we care about water on the moon when we have so much here on Earth? Well, that's the point. We don't need it on Earth. We need it on the moon. And once you have water on the moon, you've got hydrogen and oxygen. You've got a source for these two elements, and you can breathe the oxygen, and you can make drinking water, and you can make rocket propellant, and you can do any number of things once you have access to water on the body of a planet, and that's a good thing. So El Cross Moon was a big story. Number three on the list, the Ares 1X test flight. Absolutely important. We don't know where this is all going yet, but to see that rocket lift off, to see them test it, 327 feet tall, four-segment first stage, a dummy second stage. There was a problem with the parachutes when it splashed down. That's being addressed. The first stage was damaged because of that, but that's okay. The hardware was never going to get used again. Unclear on whether we're going to need future test flights or not, but the whole thing gave really the Kennedy Space Center and the space flight program a real shot in the arm, I thought, to say that there is a future out there. There's a possibility we can go do something else besides shuttle, and we're going to do it. We don't know what that is yet, but we'll, whatever we get to, it's possible. And I thought that rocket lifting off was one of the prettiest things I'd ever seen. That was just a really neat thing. Let's see, what else here? Number two on the list, the space shuttle. Well, the space shuttle had an incredible run this past year. And five flights, five missions, despite weather delays, despite hydrogen leaks, that when they happen and you're going to delay a mission 2 weeks, everyone starts throwing up sand and saying, you know, we'll never get this thing done. We'll never get all these flights off the ground in time. And yet NASA was able to get this stuff turned around and fly five missions. Discovery in March carried up a solar set of solar rays to the International Space Station, really giving it its major final look, that full balanced look of the space station is so cool. Atlantis went up in May to the Hubble Space Telescope and repaired it for the last time, serviced it for the last time. Five spacewalks required it to go do that. Hubble has already sent back images from the new instruments installed there, which are just absolutely mind-blowing, dazzling, exciting stuff. Better than anything we've seen in the decades since Hubble's been up there, and more to come on that. In fact, I hope that Hubble doesn't just go away now, even though this was the last shuttle mission to go up and do something with it. I'm really hoping that we can go back up there with some commercial vehicle someday, some government vehicle someday, get that Hubble, find a way to get it back to Earth and put it on display in the Smithsonian. Endeavour in July, Japanese science equipment. Discovery in August with a supply mission. Atlantis in November with a spare parts flight. All of that without a hitch, making it look so easy, and every mission getting more complicated. Every mission building toward the future here where we're going to retire the space shuttle in 2010. We got five more flights ahead here and then see what happens. And the station fully equipped and will be by that time to deal with it. So let's see here. 65432. We got one more story to talk about. And we're going to do that in just a few minutes as we come back from this final break. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. And a quick word, by the way, to let you know that we've got some interesting guests coming up here in the next week. I want to also let you know that the next launch, by the way, is February 3rd right now, the target. February 3rd, an Atlas V launch, United Launch Alliance Atlas V, carrying NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory satellite. Could kick off a very busy week here at the Cape. February 3rd right now, the target for Atlas V. Endeavour targeted for February 7th. As we mentioned earlier, the Falcon 9 from SpaceX, hoping for early February launch as well. So nothing in January, but that first week of February should promise to be an interesting week if all things hold together. So we've been counting down the top 10 space stories of 2009, and now I would like to present to you the final story, the number one story of 2009, the Augustine panel. There you go. You know, with just a little planning, Aaron can do some remarkable things. The Augustine panel. Have we been talking about that for the whole year, really? This is all about the future of the space program. This is about what's happening in 2010 and beyond. And really, it was the undercurrent of all of 2009. And the story is still not finished. We still don't know exactly what the president's going to do. But let's set the stage for what's possible, and let's talk about this panel here in our remaining few minutes together. First of all, they were formed again this spring, actually in June, by President Obama, who wanted to take a look at where we were at, where we were going, and whether we were on the right path with the right hardware and the right destinations. And so they put together this White House panel, headed up by Norm Augustine, famous, respected Lockheed Martin, former Lockheed Martin president, chairman, has head up a lot of these panels in the past, has always been the go-to guy for this kind of space policy work. And they put together their team, and they started looking at everything. And they put together an executive summary and released it in September. The official report went to the White House in October. We've heard some talk about it. We've heard hints at what may happen. We've heard about extra money. We've heard about programs being canceled, other programs being started. We've seen some shuffling in personnel at NASA, but nothing definitive, nothing concrete to say exactly what it is the final word. We know that Charlie Bolden, NASA Administrator Bolden, met with the president just before Christmas and allegedly to hammer out some of these details and have a discussion. Again, we don't know anything yet in reality about where this is going. Could wind up not being till the State of the Union, the end of the month. It could be till the February release of the budget, or maybe we'll get a word from the president at some kind of a special event that may or may not be in tap. But what did the Augustine panel say is the key thing, and what are the options, and where we might be heading with all this? Well, the quote here from Norm Augustine in the executive summary, I think, sums it up, obviously. That's what an executive summary is supposed to do. He said, quote, "The premier conclusion of the committee is the human spaceflight program the United States is currently pursuing is one that's on an unsustainable trajectory. We say that because of a mismatch between the scope of the program and the funds to support the program. That's of great concern to us because human spaceflight, where safety accounts for everything, is a very unforgiving sort of pursuit." And, of course, what he's saying is what we've all been saying for so long, is that NASA's being asked to do too much with too little. And everyone wants to blame NASA for shortcomings and NASA for the delays and NASA for the screw-ups and all that, but when it comes down to is that these very capable engineers and I believe very capable managers are being asked to do things without given the tools by the very people that are complaining that they're not getting the job done. And that seems to me to been the way it's been, certainly in my adult life. And as I read more and more about things that, for example, NASA Administrator James Webb did back in the 60s, Tom Paine did, some of these other administrators, it seems to been the story forever, and it seems to be maybe a government thing. I believe government has a role in the space program. It needs to lead. It needs to do things. It needs to have an appropriate role. And then it does need to turn over to private sector and commercial. We can argue when is the right time and all that. But there is a role for the government. If the government's going to do this, it's got to do it right. We've got to maintain our leadership in space, and we're not doing that. We're not heading in the right direction. The Augustine panel underscores this. So the Augustine panel comes up with five plans. They didn't actually make a formal recommendation. They didn't say this is the best one, although they all kind of privately afterwards personally put in their 2 cents, and it's pretty clear which one most of the panelists seem to favor. But the report itself was laid out very objectively, and it offered these five quick, I shouldn't say quick, I'm looking at the clock and saying I got to say them quickly, five plans. First of all, program of record, basically one idea was to fly shuttle out as needed, deorbit the space station in 2016, Ares 1 and Orion not available until 2017, Ares 5 until the 2020s, no money for lunar operations until well into the 2030s. That was one idea. Another idea, keep the space station up to 2020, develop a new version of the Ares 5 heavy lift vehicle, finish shuttle on time, use commercial cargo for crew, no moon, don't even consider the moon until the 2030s. The third idea was basically go the way we're going right now until policy changes, which is to finish shuttle, deorbit the space station in 2016, bring on Ares 1 in 2017, and try to get to the moon by 2020. The fourth idea was to head directly to the moon, basically. Keep that in mind. Keep ISS going till 2020. Use commercial folks to get into orbit. The moon in the 2020s. Do it one of two ways. One, build an Ares V light using a lot of more of shuttle hardware. The other idea would be to extend the shuttle program to 2015. In other words, fly the existing space shuttle for another 5 years at some kind of minimum safe rate, and then design and build a new heavy lift vehicle that is more directly derived from the shuttle program, as opposed to kind of what they were looking at with Ares V or something else. And again, I think about the Shuttle C concept, the cargo vehicle, the idea of putting an unmanned cargo vehicle on the side of the external tank instead of the winged orbiter. The fifth idea was called the flexible path, and this was finish shuttle out till 2011 as needed, extend the space station to 2020, use the commercial opportunities to get crew and cargo into low Earth orbit, and then build one of new variations of a new heavy lift vehicle, one, an Ares V light. The second idea, using something with the current Delta IV and Atlas V rockets. And the third idea, back to the shuttle-derived Shuttle C concept. And so where is that going to go? We don't know. We just don't know where this is going to happen. But those are the ideas that are out there. And the Augustin panel making it their the top story of the year. Well, moving ahead, next week, Shuttle Weather Officer Kathy Winters is going to join us. January 16th, Glenn Mahone from the Coalition for Space Exploration is going to be my guest. January 23rd, space historian Frederick Ordway is going to be on the program. So we've got an exciting month of programs looking ahead. I want to thank all of you for listening today. Say Happy New Year one more time. Don't forget, you can stay in touch with us at WMNBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, throughout the week. Follow us at Twitter at Space Talking. Don't forget, Space Talking, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Thanks for listening today again. Happy New Year. I'm Jim Bankey, and as always, you're listening to WMMB.